This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Welcome to the Trumpet's weekly review of all the important news. I'm Joel Hilliker, and with me is our panel here in the studio. We have Jeremiah Jacques.
Hi there.
And Andrew Miller.
Hello.
From our office in Britain, we have Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And from our office in Jerusalem, Brent Nachtigall.
Hello.
What a wild time this is in the United States of America, with the Biden president-elect train continuing to move forward with freight train intensity, while a slew of challenges to the election results also proceed forward. For Trumpet readers, knowing the forecast of our editor-in-chief really makes all of these developments gripping theater, and it's certain to get even more epic. I do really hope that you are listening to Stephen Fleury on the Trumpet Daily radio show. It is indispensable to making sense of all that's going on right now. And needless to say, those who think the election is settled are having a whole lot of facts to the contrary thrown in their faces. To learn about some of the latest of these facts, we'll turn now to Andrew Miller.
The Kraken was officially released on Wednesday when attorney Sidney Powell filed lawsuits in both Michigan and Georgia, and there'll be lawsuits in other states to come. Just focusing on and a little bit on these details for the Georgia lawsuit. That's the state where it's still razor thin margins between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. The lawsuit, it's alleging massive election fraud, accusing the Georgia state governor, the Georgia secretary of state, the chair of the Georgian state election board of a number of constitutional violations. It cites witnesses, brings in some expert testimony, highlights some statistical improbabilities, but it's mainly focused in on, as we've covered on this program before, the Dominion voting software system, saying that it switched thousands of votes, millions of votes nationwide, from President Trump to Joe Biden. And we'll see in the days ahead, is now that this lawsuit is, like, it's been released, it's officially out there. You can start seeing attorneys and other people go through it and getting back with us on what's verified. But I mean, it's a huge story. These are huge and bold claims she's making. Talking about this Dominion software, we have an article up on our website earlier this week. Is U.S. voter fraud a crazy conspiracy theory? That really highlights some of the connections that Dominion had with software it's purchased in the past from Sequoia, a company that was founded by Venezuelan entrepreneurs and was controversially involved in some of the elections in Venezuela, especially the 2004 one that were rigged. She's alleging this to not just software from Venezuela. She's mentioning there's connections with the Chinese Communist Party as well, and that actually is kind of something that maybe you wouldn't have thought of, but that's like a huge seems to be a huge bastion of support for President Trump is Chinese dissidents. American media is condemning Sidney Powell as this crazy conspiracy theorist, but it seems like it's people who've actually lived under the Chinese Communist Party and got away that have really come to Trump's aid, saying that he's right about this voter fraud. They've experienced similar things before. The Wall Street Journal had a piece, not complimentary of President Trump, but just highlighting many of the dissidents. One student leader from the Tiananmen Square protest, it highlighted the work the Epoch Times is doing. They've been one of the papers that's really been on top every day with new revelations of voter fraud. And they're...
Seems like it's just about the only source that is reporting on all of these, just stating the facts rather than trying to bury it or pigeonhole it or discredit it.
Right. And in one hand, that sounds kind of strange that you'd have a newspaper that newspapers founded out of China. I mean, it's not operating there anymore now. It's an exile. But that you'd have the, like I said, a Chinese paper like that doing all the legwork investigating an American election. But also the editorial board there, the reason they had to flee China is because it was ruled by a communist dictatorship. So they're trying to prevent reliving that history in their new country.
Stephen Fleury has been making the point on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show that if the press reported on all of these irregularities and problems with half of the zeal and fervor with which it reported on all of the allegations against President Trump, there would be just a tremendous amount of information emerging. As it is, it's having to be done entirely by these legal teams.
Right, right. No, you would think that the press would be able to do a lot more. And that's actually one of the things that surprised me the most about this election, is that I'm not surprised that the mainstream media is being biased against President Trump, but about how many of these concerns you can find in mainstream media outlets from like a couple of years ago, things that they brought up. For example, one of those Chinese dissidents I mentioned accused Jack Ma, he's the Chinese CEO of Alibaba, of being one of the figures behind the election fraud, because he was selling electronic components to Dominion Voting and some of these other software systems, which sounds like a pretty far out there accusation. But then it didn't take much digging. I even found Bloomberg News, and it's run by Mike Bloomberg, who isn't necessarily a bastion of conservative values here in America. But this is from the beginning of this year, from January. He talks about Chinese technology and voting machines seen as emerging threat. And he actually covers Dominion voting systems, saying that their reliance on electronics from China is a potential problem down the road. Now, Bloomberg News isn't making headlines about that this week, because the election has gone the way the leadership at Bloomberg wanted it to go.
Right. Suddenly they're totally uninterested in any kind of problems that there may be with the Dominion and all of these voting machines. Well, we actually have several people on staff helping Stephen Fleury in digging through a lot of the information that's emerging, looking at these lawsuits and doing some of the investigative work that the press just isn't doing, and trying to dig up as much of that information as possible. Again, all of this is just extraordinary to watch. Just knowing what we know, what our editor-in-chief has said, just based on the prophecies of the Bible, the outcome that this election is going to have. If you have not read it, I highly encourage you to read his cover story for the next print edition of The Trumpet. This just went to press last week. It is up at thetrumpet.com right now. Why Donald Trump Will Remain America's President. Just a landmark article that will completely change the way that you're viewing all of this chaos that's going on, and it'll bring understanding and sanity to what you're seeing here. Do read that article. We've also got that article that Andrew just mentioned, is U.S. Voter Fraud, A Conspiracy Theory. We'll link to both of those on the show notes for today's program. And thank you very much for that, Andrew. There are a lot of people preparing themselves for a Biden presidency. We'll look now at the effects that we're seeing in the Middle East, where a shift in policy from Trump to Biden would have massive effects. In anticipation of this shift, it looks like the clouds of war are building. To learn about this, we'll turn to Brent Noctegal.
Yeah, there were some specific changes in the region this week that were coming on the heels of and during the visit by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo that carried over from last weekend. Of course, he visited Israel for a few days, as we discussed last week, and then he had a highly secret meeting with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Zayed, and this was taking place in the northern Red Sea area of Noam, which is a city that he's building that's meant to be some type of cutting-edge technology city of the future. And he met there covertly with Mr. Pompeo and also the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the first meeting that's taken place between an Israeli leader and the leader of Saudi Arabia, or at least the incoming leader of Saudi Arabia. Of course, the king is in power right now, but the whole direction of the country is led by MBS, as he's called. And they met on I think it was Sunday night now. And this was a meeting that, although it was secret, was one that was destined to get out to the press just because the prime minister's plane, a private jet that he usually takes on covert trips, was its transponder was left on. And so we saw where it landed. And no one denied the meeting taking place inside Israel following. And it really does speak to the closer relationship that Israel has had with Gulf states. We know about the UAE peace deal, the Bahrain peace deal. Of course, Saudi Arabia is the big fish there that Israel would love to have a peace deal with. That doesn't necessarily look like it's going to be here tomorrow. But one item that was on the agenda that was leaked to the press was, of course, the danger that the region faces now from Iran, especially pending what looks to be a transition away of power from a relationship with the United States. Pardon?
A very pro-Iranian administration coming into the presidency.
Right, compared to what we have right now, which has been the most anti-Iranian, or let's say anti-Iranian leadership administration in President Trump, with his maximum pressure campaign that Israel, the Gulf states have all been supportive of. And Israel and the Gulf states are extremely worried when they get an Obama-esque foreign policy coming in, which seeks to raise up Iran, join the nuclear deal once again, flush Iran with cash. And Saudi Arabia, UAE, Israel are worried that the gains that they have achieved against Iran are going to be washed away. And so it looks like, and this is part speculation, but it is speculation that has gone across different news outlets, that the region might be preparing for somewhat of a war in the next couple of months to try and make the most of the pro-American presidency of Donald Trump before they see, as they see it, him leaving office.
Well, it really has been concern over Iran that has been driving all of these peace deals between Arab states and Israel, and the fact that we've been kind of anticipating some kind of a warming of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. But it makes sense that that would be accelerated given the general belief that a Biden presidency is imminent. What other signs do you see that indicate this concern that this could actually erupt into war?
There were two strikes last week, heavily public strikes against Iranians, Iranian installations, Iranian soldiers operating inside Syria also. Israel attacked the Damascus International Airport because there are Iranians working there. Iran came out and said that their advisors were attacked and that Israel should stop it because they're going to get, you know, their just punishments. Israel also dropped leaflets on the Syrian Golan Heights, warning the residents not to take refuge with Hezbollah fighters as well as Iranian fighters in their midst, which is something that Israel does as a precursor to attack generally inside the Gaza Strip. You also had a day after this meeting between Netanyahu and MBS, you had the Houthis, which are the Iranian-backed proxy operating out of Yemen, fire Scud missiles against oil facilities in Saudi Arabia. This is something we've seen before. Remember, on the other side of the Persian Gulf, from Iranian-backed or Iranian soldiers themselves. And so it comes down to, you also have the B-52s. The United States have sent their B-52 bombers, strategic bombers, into the region. This was a decision that was made last week, and now they're here at a base on the Persian Gulf. These are obviously highly effective at bombing, thick carpet bombing certain locations. Of course, people have painted. The New York Times had a story last week that Trump is preparing for a war, but that his advisors said, no, don't do it. However, it's hard to see that it's not going to come from those in the region right now. I mean, Israel itself has known that they have a a horrible situation that is untenable with Hezbollah holding 150,000 missiles that are directed towards the Jewish state. And Israel knows that any war, when a war with Iran does come, that those missiles will be activated. And so there is a desire from Israel to get rid of that threat. And the threat would be best gotten rid of when you have an American power that does support you in that. And so if you're Israel, if you're Saudi Arabia, and if you think you have 7 or 8 weeks before Trump is gone, do you try and knock back the Iranian regime as much as you can before you have a very pro-Iranian regime power come into the United States Oval Office? Of course you would. It's not pleasurable for any Israeli to think about a war with Hezbollah, but everyone knows it will happen and it will come. And so there are some strategic thinkers saying, well, perhaps this is the best time to enact this war because President Trump would assist it.
Well, I suppose whether this actually erupts in war, we will see, and we'll see quite soon, I would think. Nevertheless, whatever happens, the threat from Iran isn't going anywhere. And this factor that really is driving these nations together is going to remain. And just seeing this kind of warming between Israel and Saudi Arabia is quite extraordinary given what prophecy says.
Yeah, it certainly is. And that's a larger point that our editor-in-chief, Mr. Gerald Flurry, draws attention to in the latest print edition of the Trumpet magazine. He had an article entitled Deadly Floor in Mideast Peace Deals. And it talks about how Israel's relationship that is really flourishing with Gulf states and now Saudi Arabia looking to join that is a result of a relationship of convenience because they all fear Iran and what Iran wants to do in the region. And we know that there is a prophesied alliance coming between Saudi Arabia, UAE, Gulf states, and other anti-Iranian actors, including a resurgent German-led Europe. That's what we're waiting for to see this that addition to this alliance as well. But as he reveals in this article, that this alliance that Israel is now siding itself with in the region is not going to be a beneficial alliance in the long term. And their reliance on the Gulf states will backfire severely. Again, this article explains the prophecy of that. It's entitled Deadly Floor in Mideast Peace Deals.
All right. We'll link to that in the show notes. We thank you very much for that, Brent. As the Middle East prepares for war, over in Russia, we see an acceleration of its military buildup. For this story, we'll go to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, Russia's military power was really on just glaring display over the last few days in a number of developments that show just how much Vladimir Putin is building the country's firepower up. So first, Moscow announced that 2020 will set a record for the number of advanced warships that the Russian Navy adds. The head of the National Defense Control Center talked about this, and he said that they've reached a new level of coordination between Russia's various shipyards. And so because of that, they're able to churn out submarines and surface ships at remarkable speed. And this year, they've already laid down 35 advanced vessels. So that equates to a 33% increase in the amount of naval hardware that is now considered to be advanced. So just a very significant increase that happened in 1 year. And then in a separate development, the Russian military said it has laid the scientific foundation to develop a brand new tactical weapon that will take the place of the Iskander-M missile system. So this one's still a ways from being rolled out, but upon completion, it will become the main weapon system for Russian artillery and missile forces, and it will just considerably outshine its predecessors. And then this week, there were also three very significant missile tests. The first one was on Tuesday when the Northern Fleet fired a caliber cruise missile from its new 885M Kazan nuclear submarine. And the missile hit a coastal target about 620 miles away. And this success marked one of the final hurdles that this advanced submarine needed to clear before officially joining the Russian Navy later this year. And then the next day, Russia's newest corvette struck a sea target for the very first time with a nuclear-capable KH-35 missile. This one was especially interesting because it came just hours after the USS John McCain had conducted a freedom of navigation operation in the Peter the Great Gulf there on Russia's east coast. And the Russians say they intercepted the U.S. ship and ran it out of the waters there. And then just hours later, they conducted this landmark test. So just a pretty interesting sequence of events, I think. And then yesterday, Russia tested its vaunted Tsirkon hypersonic cruise missile. This was from a fleet in the White Sea, and the missile flew at a speed of more than Mach 8, so just speeds that are hard to even comprehend. And experts are saying now that the Tsirkon could actually hit satellites in low Earth orbit. So chilling implications for that. And I think when you put all this together, it just shows that it was quite a big week for Russia's military.
Yeah, that's a lot of headlines coming out of one nation in 1 week. If you wouldn't mind, can you put this in the context of the efforts that Putin has been taking for some time to boost his military capabilities?
Sure, yes. Yeah, these developments from the last week are really just the most recent steps in his what has been just a tenacious drive to build up Russia's military power. There was a report last month published by the International Institute for Strategic Studies, and it noted that Putin's focus on military strength has already made Russia's military more lethal and capable than at any time since the end of the Cold War. One part of this report says, though significantly smaller than their Soviet predecessors, Russia's forces are better equipped, with professional personnel increasingly prevalent. And then this report is interesting because it talks about the fact that Russia has not been building all this up for no reason. It discusses Russia's annexation of Crimea, its involvement in the ongoing war there in eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, we've talked about just what a good job Putin tends to do at leveraging all of the resources at his command to maximum effect.
That's exactly right, yes. And also the what has been a fairly decisive intervention in the Syrian civil war there. So it just shows that Russia is building up its military power to record levels, and it's actually using it. It's putting all that firepower to use.
So from a prophetic standpoint, watching Russia take the lead in all of these areas, it is significant with so much attention really being absorbed in China, and China's moves around the world. Prophecy talks about a relationship between Russia and China. We've discussed this a lot, but what's interesting is that it really highlights the leadership role that Russia takes. And I think there would be a lot of people looking at the situation that would probably underestimate Russia from a leadership standpoint relative to the threat that China poses.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Russian technology has long led China's, and a lot of the advancements that China has made have been because Russia has given them know-how and even sold them a lot of very advanced weaponry. And of course, when you look at the nuclear arsenals of the two nations, Russia's is magnitudes larger there. But Russia definitely has far more military power than I think the average person is aware of, and it's a pretty chilling scenario.
So given the fact that Vladimir Putin tends to use this technology, and it really is in a lot of ways Eastern Europe and former Soviet satellite states that he has his sights set on, watching all of these headlines has to be making a whole lot of people nervous in that part of the world.
Yeah, I think everywhere around the world, leaders are acutely aware of Putin's military buildup, and many of them are concerned about the fact that he's using that power in various locations. But in Europe, though, it's often going beyond just awareness and beyond concern, and it's actually becoming a fear of Russia. And this is something that Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury has been writing about for a number of years now. One of his landmark articles was written in 2014, just after Russia had annexed Crimea there in Europe. This article is called "The Crimean Crisis is Reshaping Europe," and he discussed Bible prophecies recorded in the books of Daniel and Revelation especially. These books say that a block of 10 European leaders will unite in the end time, and they'll form a military powerhouse that will unleash just staggering amounts of destruction in the final world war. And Mr. Fleury emphasized that one of the big factors that would pressure those European nations to lay aside their differences would be Russian militarism and Russian aggression. So it's a very powerful article. And in the 6 years since it was written, Russia has only become more aggressive and more militaristic and provocative, including with all these developments that we talked about from the last week or so. So it just shows that we need to watch Russia as it keeps building up its firepower, but we also need to watch Europe to see how it responds to that Russian buildup.
Well, Jeremiah has written an article on this subject that we can link to in the show notes. That will appear on the Trumpet site soon. If it's not there already, Putin accelerates buildup of Russian military power. Thanks so much, Jeremiah. Over now to Britain, which is entering a complicated new series of coronavirus lockdowns. There are reports showing the effects that all these lockdowns are having on Britain's economy. For this story, we'll turn to Richard Palmer.
Here is a headline from Britain's Financial Times. Now, the Financial Times is a very sober, serious newspaper in tiny print read by businessmen. You know, this isn't the Sun or the Daily Mail, some big tabloid mass circulation. Their headline, "Gruesome UK Forecasts Lay Bare Cost of Coronavirus Crisis." That's quite a verdict from a normally pretty boring set of bankers. The Office of Budget Responsibility over here in the UK. This is the government department that is responsible for making economic forecasts. They put forward their forecast for the next year or so, and it shows that Britain is in a record-breakingly bad economic situation for peacetime. Then the governors, or the chancellor, the government minister who is responsible for spending, he followed that up with a speech and some new proposals in the House of Commons. And he was also very pessimistic, warning that Britain was heading for its worst recession in 300 years. And talking about how Britain's budget would reach the highest ever level in peacetime. The Office of Budgetary Responsibility forecast a £30 billion annual hole. That's £30 billion a year of money that they need to work out where that's going to come from. That's on top of already plans for borrowing. So I think this was even worse than most people were expecting the fallout from the coronavirus crisis would be, and the shutdown measures that the government has taken.
It really is amazing to see the see Britain falling the way that it is and falling into debt the way that it is, given the heights that it enjoyed at one time. And we do focus on this quite a lot at the Trumpet simply because of how prominently Britain features in Bible prophecy. God actually blessed that empire in a way that he really hasn't any other empire in history, and we see Britain just falling very much in line with what prophecy said would happen as well.
We do, and one thing actually I even forgot to mention is the fact that we're printing money. That's how Britain is able to borrow all of this, is just about all of the government's coronavirus borrowing is financed by the Bank of England printing the money and buying that debt up directly. So we're not even borrowing money. We're into Zimbabwe economics really here. And the printing, there was more data on that, and that's close to £1 trillion, which is really unprecedented in all of economic history in a lot of ways. But as you say, we look at this because the Bible does have some very specific forecasts. It talks about the massive prosperity that we've seen in Britain over the last 200 years is very specifically prophesied in the Bible. And then the same book and the same prophecies talk about, well, if you don't turn to God and if you don't acknowledge the source of those blessings, then they're going to be taken away. And that's exactly what we're seeing with coronavirus. In part, it's something that nobody saw coming, a kind of a quote-unquote black swan event, a cursing. The Bible also talks about, though, that God would take away leadership from Britain and America. And a lot of that massive budgetary hole comes from a very panicky leadership here in the UK that has just reacted by repeatedly saying, close everything down, close everything down, from this belief in the leadership and in the general population that you can shut down your economy, that people can stop working, but you can still have prosperity because you can keep printing money.
Right.
That is just kind of fundamentally there in our psyche. And like you said, it's something that we point out because it's so critical. One of the key books that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote was The United States and Britain in Prophecy. And he talks about these Bible prophecies that forecast Britain's prosperity and that forecast that prosperity being taken away. And he said they're the strongest proof of the inspiration and authority of the Holy Bible, and at the same time, the strongest proof of the very active existence of the living God. You have these prophecies so clearly spelled out in the Bible, and you can see them so clearly in world events, and then those same prophecies talk about them being taken away. So this subject is an opportunity to understand those critical prophecies, and a great place to do that is in Mr. Armstrong's most popular book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
You know, in our new Trumpet edition, our infographic in this issue looks at this same issue in what's happening in America. We have the title of the infographic is Economic Virus, and it depicts on this infographic how much expenditure America has put toward several important deals in its history. The New Deal from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, it actually shows how much we spent on World War II, how much we spent on the Iraq War, the Great Recession back in 2008, and then the amount of money that has been devoted to the COVID-19 pandemic, which as far as what has been spent in a single year, absolutely dwarfs all the rest of those. And it also shows how much money we have in our general money supply, and it spiked dramatically over this past year for exactly the same reasons that you're describing in Britain. It's a really fascinating infographic. It's worth spending a little bit of time just studying and trying to process what a devastating effect the response to the coronavirus has had in America, and it really is very much mirroring exactly what you're describing, Richard, over in Britain. We'll link to that in the show notes, as well as the book that he was talking about, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Thank you very much for that item, Richard. You're listening to Trumpet Hour. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, there are rumblings that China plans to attack Taiwan. There's also a nation implementing a visa ban on Muslim nations, and it's not America, and another group of people gearing up for a Joe Biden presidency. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
The Trumpet's editor-in-chief has been forecasting for decades that China would eventually take over Taiwan. Well, according to what analysts are now saying, this soon could become a fulfilled prophecy. For this story, we'll go back to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, there are just a number of military analysts saying that right now, while the U.S. is, you know, experiencing so much political chaos with the presidential election and with the country so distracted by that, that this may be the perfect time for China to strike Taiwan. So the people of China and Taiwan used to be all one nation. But there was a civil war back in the 1920s and 30s and 40s that was between the Communist Party and the nationalist Kuomintang Party. They both wanted to rule the country, but, you know, the communists won, and the Kuomintang fled to what is now known as the island of Taiwan. They set up their own country there. That was in 1949. And ever since then, China, under the Communist Party, has continued to actively claim ownership of Taiwan. China views Taiwan as just kind of an offshore rebel province, and it repeatedly threatens to use force if needed to dominate Taiwan. But the reason it has never done it for about 70 years now is because of America's support of Taiwan. The U.S. sells lots of serious military equipment to the Taiwanese. It gives them political support. And it has also said that if Taiwan is attacked, then under certain scenarios, America would go to their defense. So all of that has kept a Chinese invasion from ever happening so far. But H.R. McMaster, he's a former White House national security advisor, and he recently said that the Chinese leaders currently feel a relative advantage over the U.S., and they think it won't last long. So he said, quote, "Those leaders of the Chinese Communist Party maybe believe they're now in a position of relative advantage, which may lead them to the belief that there is just only a fleeting window of opportunity that they have to take advantage of now," end quote. So, well, then there was also Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey. He made similar remarks recently. He said, "At a time when the Chinese Communist Party's appetite for aggression continues to grow, Taiwan is really on the very front lines and is probably directly in the crosshairs." And then there were similar statements recently by the AEI Asian Studies Director, Dan Blumenthal. So this is, you know, it's hard to say if anything will materialize in the next few weeks or months, but it's quite a few experts who think that China may see that right now is just a perfect time to try to accomplish one of their most urgent foreign policy goals.
Gerald Flory was talking about this years ago, and I can't remember when. Maybe you can remind us when he brought that up. But it was really, he described the main problem being American weakness. And in a lot of ways, what you're seeing right here is exactly a result of that.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that was actually back in 1998. It happened just after U.S. President Bill Clinton had made a decision to sort of publicly oppose Taiwanese independence in some landmark statements that he made. And Mr. Flory said that that meant that it was only a matter of time before China would conquer Taiwan. And his exact phrasing for the reason for it was because of a pitifully weak-willed America.
Right.
So he put it right on America, and you can really see that happening. And he explained that his view of the whole dynamic there was based on Bible prophecy, and especially a passage in Leviticus that says America would become deeply mired in sin and that it would lose its will to use its power. And then actually just last month, Mr. Flory also spoke briefly about the whole China-Taiwan-U.S. dynamic in an episode of his Key of David television program. This episode aired on October 28th, and he said, "We have really forsaken little Taiwan, who used to be our foreign ally, but we just didn't have the courage to stand with them. So now they're really under the control of China." So he's saying there that it has already happened in a way, even without a Chinese invasion. So that's really interesting, and it could mean that China will begin asserting its power over Taiwan much more forcefully, especially if it thinks that the U.S. is too distracted to do much about it.
Well, very good. We'll link to that, the title of that article, Taiwan Betrayal, in the show notes for today's program, and also that Key of David program that Jeremiah just referenced. You can also look at our booklet, Russia and China in Prophecy, that shows the overarching prophetic trends that are driving what we're seeing between China and Taiwan. Go check those out, and we thank you very much for that, Jeremiah. Well, Donald Trump took a lot of flack for banning incoming travel from a set of Muslim nations. Well, another nation just imposed a similar ban, but this is a nation you probably would not expect. For this, we'll go back to Brent Noctegal.
Yes, the United Arab Emirates has a Muslim ban also, similar to what President Trump has, and yet it's a Muslim nation. So how could that be? Well, basically, judging from this immigration circular that was put out to its officers, they are now banning new employment and visit visas, or suspending at least for the near future, for a number of nations, 13 mostly Muslim nations. And if you look at this list, it includes Iran, Iraq, it includes Somalia, Yemen, it includes Lebanon, it includes Syria, it includes Afghanistan. Basically, if you are a nation that has not got control of your extreme terrorist element, then you're banned from entering UAE. Or if you are part of the Iranian alliance, which means you are a national state sponsor of terrorism, then you are banned from the UAE as well. And this is really significant, I think, because it does draw a distinction between the Muslim states inside the Middle East. We tend to just bunch them all together, saying that they're all the same. But many of them do have a belief towards the rule of political Islam over their populations, which includes the taking back of territories such as Israel that were once Muslim lands, and the violence that is necessary and or essential for that to take place. And the UAE is now lining up on the other side of that, saying that we are actually fearing terrorist attacks in our own country because of our relationship with the state of Israel. And so you do see, again, this dividing line in the Middle East between the radical Islamist camp, which we know is going to be led by Iran, and the other Muslim states, which we know are not going to belong to this radical Islamist empire that's growing.
Thank you very much for that, Brent. If you want more information about that prophesied division in the Arab world, you can read our trend article, Why the Trumpet Watches an Alliance Between Arab Nations and Europe. You can also check out our booklet, The King of the South. We'll link to both of those on the show notes for today's program. Now we'll talk about another group that is getting excited about the prospect of a Joe Biden presidency. We'll learn about this from Andrew Miller.
Yeah, now that the media has announced that Joe Biden is apparently the president-elect, word has spread throughout Mexico, and there's this caravans of illegal aliens heading towards the border while the getting's good in anticipation of more lenient border enforcement when the new administration they expect takes office. The in October, which was before the election, there were over 69,000 people arrested trying to cross the border. That's a 21% jump over September, and the highest total of any October since 2005. So more illegals trying to cross the border this October than any other October in 15 years. And the Customs and Border Control Agency has said that even though these arrests took place before the election, it's part of an ongoing trend of people coming here in anticipation of a Biden presidency. The Joe Biden's promise to undo many of the immigration policies President Trump has enacted, including the Muslim ban we just heard about, but also he's promised to stop deporting what he calls the Dreamers, or like those who the children of illegal immigrants born in the United States. And so you reverse that policy, and then people across Mexico and Central America can figure, it's like, well, if I just get there and have a child, I can stay. Even President Trump hasn't been strict at all in deporting those who have had children once they've gotten here. Yeah, but Joe Biden has promised to be even more lenient on that. And there's definitely those in his administration that are have promised to be even more lenient than he is. You get, especially in like the in the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the Democratic Party, you keep having this abolish ICE movement that's still going, that's basically claiming that ICE is the acronym for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. So basically saying that you want to abolish border control and truly have an open border, which you can see why that would encourage more people to come. The according to the latest statistics, which are a few years old, from the Department of Homeland Security, there's about 12 million illegal immigrants in the United States. And those statistics are calculated by subtracting the number of legal immigrants from the foreign-born population as identified by the Census Bureau. And so when you riddle that out, it basically means there's 12 million illegal immigrants in America so confident they're never going to be deported that they're willing to self-identify on a census form. Researchers from Yale and MIT have come up with other ways to estimate the population and figure there's really probably between 16 and 30 million illegal immigrants in the nation.
Despite, phenomenal.
Despite the outcry against the Trump administration, especially when he first took office, he's deported less than a million of those, and more than a million have come during his administration. So the population of illegal immigrants has actually increased during the Trump administration, probably increased slower than it would have under a Clinton administration, but still increasing.
Just last week, we were talking about China actually sponsoring drug cartels in Mexico as a means of trying to destabilize the United States. It's really, and part of that discussion is basically this is the only nation in the Western Hemisphere that's close enough to the United States to really cause problems that would destabilize America. Here you have more evidence of that.
Right, yeah. Peter Zeihan at Stratford made that point back in 2008, basically making the point that, like, in North America, I mean, there's only 30, 40 million people or so in Canada, but Mexico with, like, 130 million people, if you can get an open border, and because Mexico is basically a failed state with drug cartels and other corruption right now, if you can get an open border, that he called a seething anarchy, would spill over into the United States. I can read that quote again, where he says, in many regards, Mexico as a failed state would be a worse result for Washington than a hostile United Mexico. A hostile Mexico could be intimidated, sanctioned, even invaded, effectively browbeaten into submission. But a failed Mexico would not restrict the drug trade at all. The border would be chaos, and the implications would go well beyond drugs. One of the United States' largest trading partners could devolve into a seething anarchy that could not help but leak into the United States proper. And that analysis is just based on, like, using the drug trade to destabilize Mexico. Is like, well, some of that chaos is going to seep into the United States. But if you've got open border policies, it's not going to be a seeping so much as it is just like a rushing flood into the United States. That's why we have border control. It's not motivated out of any sense of racism, but it's just that, like, you've got to screen people to see if their background, see if they have a criminal background, and then determine how many can come here each year and still melt into this melting pot of cultures without completely upending our culture and economy and form of government.
Right. We were talking in the first half with Richard about the United States and Britain and prophecy, and how the Bible forecasts this rise of power in the United States and Britain, but then the subsequent fall of those powers and dramatic fall of those powers because of their disobedience to God. Really, the curses associated with immigration in America are part of that decline and fall.
Right, and in those same chapters, I mean, it's listing blessings and cursings, and one of the curses is an open border. It talks about Israel being besieged in all their gates till their high and fenced walls come down. It talks about foreigners whose language you don't understand just coming into the country, and some of that moves beyond the illegal immigration stage of phase into an all-out foreign invasion. But it is interesting that, I guess it just shows even how much common sense has declined in that, like, when God told ancient Israel that, like, I'll bless you with secure borders if you obey me and curse you with an open border if you don't, they realized that, okay, that's a blessing we want and that's a cursing we don't. And right. I guess it's almost like more like the Republicans today kind of fall in the standpoint of where the ancient Israelites were, is they realize what's a blessing and what's a cursing. They may not be following God to the extent they receive those blessings and get rid of those cursings. But the radical left is more just like, bring on
embracing
the curses.
Curse. Yeah. It's remarkable. Well, Andrew has written an article, Border Crossing Surge in Anticipation of Biden Presidency. That'll be up at the Trumpet site very soon. We thank you very much, Andrew. We have one last story. The Pope is finishing a new book. For some clues about what's on the Pope's mind, we'll go back to Richard Palmer.
Yes, this book doesn't come out until December, and so we're not sure of the final content. But this week, we got a glimpse at some more details, and I think the Associated Press summed it up very well in their coverage. They wrote, "At times, it seems he is directing his message squarely at the United States, as Donald Trump's administration winds down 4 years of America First policies that exclude migrants from Muslim countries and diminish U.S. reliance on multilateral diplomacy. Without identifying the U.S. or Trump by name, Francis singles out Christian-majority countries where nationalist populist leaders seek to defend Christianity from perceived enemies. So as we've become accustomed to from this Pope, he will not say President Trump, but he will leave you in no doubt who he is talking about. In this case, he basically called President Trump Hitler. He said he looks at what's going on in, again, without naming it, but very clearly America. And he says he's reminded of the 1930s, where some democracies collapse and dictatorships rise overnight. And he says, we see it happening again now in rallies where populist leaders excite and harangue crowds, channeling their resentments and hatreds against imagined enemies to distract from the real problem. And he went on to talk about how it's unchristian. In his book, he did talk about the killing of George Floyd, getting more specific. And he talked about how important it was for Christians to support the George Floyd protests and that movement, and how, you know, basically he was saying it's superficial religiousness if you don't get behind those protests. If you don't get out and protest for George Floyd, you're a superficial Christian, says the Pope. So getting right down involved in some of the big issues in the culture wars. So that's what he's been writing. I mean, if anything's going to remind you of what's going, of things that went on in the 1930s, I would have thought it would be a Pope signing a murky deal with an authoritarian dictatorship that's currently committing genocide, as the Catholic Church recently signed a deal with China. But no, to him, the big issue is President Donald Trump.
This reminds me of an article that Gerald Flory wrote some years ago. Why is the Pope meddling in American politics? Why is it so critical that you have the head of the largest single church in the world attacking America's president from a prophetic standpoint?
Well, this is exactly the conflict that the Bible tells us is coming up. This that you've got a European power heavily influenced by the Catholic Church, and Revelation chapter 17 talks about this power. It talks about a woman riding a beast. A beast in biblical symbolism is an empire, a woman, a church. And you can look at all the details that it gives in Revelation chapter 17 and see that it's referring to an empire in Europe led by the Catholic Church. And so it talks about that, and it says that this is the tool God is using to punish America. And other chapters even talk about this power, you know, allying with China, allying with some of these Asian powers so that they can take down the United States. And you see all of this building. Exactly the way that the Bible said that it would. And you mentioned that that article from Mr. Flory, which is a great place to go to learn more about this. I also wrote about this whole story in the latest Trumpet print edition in an article called Europe versus Donald Trump, where you can really see that clash, I think, taking on much more clarity. And you've seen that much more clearly just over the last few months and just in the aftermath of the U.S. election. I think you can really see that building now.
Well, thank you very much for that, Richard. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that's it for today's Trumpet Hour. Email us your thoughts on the program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to our panel, Jeremiah Jacques, Andrew Miller, Richard Palmer, and Brent Noctegal. Thanks to Jeremiah for engineering and production. I'll leave you with the words of Henry Miller. The moment one gives close attention to anything, even a blade of grass, it becomes a mysterious, awesome, indescribably magnificent world in itself. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.